This is Monocle on Design. I'm Josh Fennett. On today's show...
Designing a library, a good, functional, beautiful, monumental library is a really, really difficult task for an architect.
We take a closer look at libraries. Though many predicted the relevance of these institutions would fade in the face of the internet, some are at long last turning a page. We meet the women behind the Finnish Pavilion at the Venice Architecture Biennale, an exhibition which pays tribute to library design and its role in society. Then we head to Sao Paulo to learn how a public library, the first in Latin America to be open 24 hours a day, has helped improve the Brazilian city's long low literacy rates. All that coming up right here on Monocle on Design. Do stay tuned. Now, when it comes to public libraries, the Finns do it as well as anyone. Finland has more than 800 such spaces, which collectively stock more than 30 million books. Each citizen, statistics suggest, borrows an average of 12 books a year. Helsinki alone is home to nearly 40 libraries, with the majority evenly scattered in the suburbs to ensure access in all parts of the city. There are also two library buses that roll their merry way through rural and remote regions. The approach is a marked contrast to many other countries around the world, where funding for libraries has been slashed and resources have been poured into e-learning, technology and backlit screens, rather than those old-fashioned bound books. The Finnish Pavilion at this year's Venice Architecture Biennale charts the history of Finnish library design and asks an intriguing question. No, not if they'll survive. There's a supposition that they will. But what will libraries of the future look like? Monocle's Helsinki correspondent Petri Bertsov met with the exhibition's curator, Anni Varttola, as well as the Finnish Architecture Information Centre's director, Hanna Harris, at the site of Helsinki's upcoming new central library, Uudi. Petri began by asking Hanna and Anni about how Uudi reflects the way in which libraries are changing.
We are now sat next to the construction site of the next kind of main landmark, I suppose, in the design of Finnish libraries, the Uudi, new Helsinki Central Library, which in itself will give a story that incorporates both all those things that libraries have given us throughout the decades and where they are going. And maybe importantly, that kind of says that they have always been changing, but they have always adapted as well to how people use libraries here in Finland, and they use them a lot. Now we are looking at a space here where we will have both the kind of perhaps more traditional idea of what libraries are, the kind of the book and the reading aspect. There's a strong reading culture here, and there still is. That will take various forms, but there is that element in a very kind of uplifting way, literally, on the top floor here of Uudi. There will be something that's very much about doing, learning, sharing together in very modular ways, which is the middle floor, a kind of a parallel activities taking place, multiple parallel activities, and then we have the sort of extension of a public space, because that's what they really are as well, and that's a very big gesture here in Uudi.
Anni Varttola, how do you see the future of libraries? What will future libraries look like?
Well, if we think of about the exhibition and the library samples on display, one can easily see that the trend is more and more towards even more open and collaborative spaces. And if we think of late 19th century architecture, with which our exhibition sort of starts, there are more and more spaces just to be. They're not just library spaces for library collections or reading, but also these maker spaces, which is a quite new concept, and then meeting rooms, etc. So that's, I think, something that will be even stronger and stronger.
You mentioned that there will be kind of multifunction spaces and spaces for other stuff, not just reading and checking out books. I'm curious to know, is the way in which we use libraries changing in the future, or has it perhaps already changed?
Well, the statistics in Finland show, first of all, that libraries are really heavily used, and they are heavily used in all demographic groups, which is really, really important. So we are looking at, from toddlers to pensioners and everything in between. So that's something that is perhaps a constant that's not changing so much. That's important to keep in mind. children's departments, for instance, in libraries in Finland, have from very early on been very important. They've been given their kind of... They're not some kind of a sidetrack. They are an important part of those buildings in various ways. That has taken different forms, of course, but that's something that's not changing. I'd perhaps like to underline that there are things that are still sort of valued there. Likewise, the fact that all these different groups are coming to libraries for different reasons, but still that they're kind of all present, that's very important as well, and libraries very well cater for different groups. What perhaps is the thing that is a kind of a growing new entry is that those things that you can do or find or discover or share in libraries, they're multiplying. So that doesn't mean that certain old functions are disappearing. It means that there are new things coming in addition to what they traditionally do as well. Those things that you can do or find or discover or share in libraries, they're multiplying. So that doesn't mean that certain old functions are disappearing. It means that there are new things coming in addition to what they traditionally do as well.
Okay, that's interesting. Anni, because of this changing nature of library use, what does this entail then for library design, library architecture?
I would certainly mention that it's becoming more and more complicated. Designing a library, a good, functional, beautiful, monumental library is a really, really difficult task for an architect. And the constraints are huge, not only because of budgets, because libraries are publicly funded buildings. There's not much room for extravaganza, so to speak. So it's a really complicated task to fit in all these various special needs. Just, for instance, take the book collections, how their logistics work. The book buses coming in and you have to circulate the books and shelve them, etc. And then all these meeting places, co-working spaces, everything. And then it has to be wrapped in a way that it's appealing and beautiful and also something that we can be proud of and see that, okay, this was not a waste of money and just another excuse to cut public spending, but just something that we can really be proud of for a long time. So I have to say I respect architects really hugely, those who design libraries. Their task is becoming more and more difficult.
And you study architecture. What's your view on Finnish libraries vis-a-vis libraries in other cultures in terms of design and architecture?
I think our top strength is plurality and just the sheer amount of them in Finland. When we were putting up this exhibition, it was really hard to choose what to take on board because we have such excellent examples of library architecture. But in general terms, it's the same applies to all Finnish architecture. We have a really good, perhaps we miss this iconic or top world-known heroic buildings, but we have really good general standards in architecture. So the middle level is good and we can be proud of. And that shows in libraries as well. I don't know any library which is just plain ugly or horrible, but even the most modest one is good and it serves its purpose.
Does library architecture always reflect the architectural ideals of its time? I mean, if I'm thinking about libraries in smaller Finnish towns, while not particularly, as Anni said, while not always particularly stunning, they are still reflections of the ideals of the time, you know, being built in the 60s or the 70s or the 80s or the next to us now.
Yes, this naturally. It's always, architecture is always tied to its time and place. And for instance, the one I really miss that we couldn't include in the exhibition is the Central Library of the city of Oulu, which was built in the 60s, and it's a part of the cultural complex in the shore, in the very heart of the Oulu shoreline. And there's a theatre building and the library building. They're a pair of cultural monuments that gave the public face of the city of Oulu at the time. And they were very controversial architecture, plain 1960 boxes, so to speak. And you can read the architecture from the buildings, you can read the ideals, the values, etc. But still they are the monumental in their own right, because they tell about that era and that idea that, okay, even the old city of Oulu can be really top modern and display absolutely stunning modernist architecture.
And then something I'd like to point out is that you look at the kind of millennium, round about the millennium has been a time when there were a number of really great libraries coming out in Finland, but that they kind of coincided with certain architectural practices rising in Finland. So, for instance, JKMM, who are an office who actually was established with the competition win of the Turku Central Library, which is a new building and a kind of annex to the old building, and it's marvelous. Like, I try to go there every time I'm in Turku. It's really amazing. It's a hugely successful building on a very difficult city center site. Hugely popular, absolutely chock-a-block full from morning to evening. A beautiful, beautiful space. And it sort of, that and some similarly other ones, Seinäjoki also by them in the Aalto Center, perhaps the Anttina Noiva-Kaisa Library, which is not technically speaking a public library, it's the University of Helsinki main library, but we included it in the show because how it's used by people of Helsinki, others also than university staff or students, it kind of, in a way, functions like a public library, how it is. So these are these kind of very central, very urban projects that are in some way tightly connected to the urban fabric of the city. Audi, of course, will very much be an urban project as well.
Thanks to our Helsinki correspondent Petri Bertsov. This is Monocle on Design. Don't go anywhere.
Summer is finally here, and so is Monocle's bumper July-August double issue. This is when we zero in on quality of life and cities, why we love them, what makes them actually work, and how they need to improve. As always, we reveal our ranking of the top 25 cities to live in worldwide. Find out if your city makes the cut. And for the first time, we present our manifesto for creating a more relaxed city. A guide to breathing in and lightening up. And a celebration of everything from taking your kit off to making a bit of a racket. In the affairs pages, we meet the urban heroes giving back to their hometowns. While in design, we take a closer look at greenery in the city and how to do it right. Elsewhere, we take a dip in Geneva's top swimming spot, we tuck into some northern Spanish grub, and we sit down for a mass with the locals in a few Bavarian beer gardens. Prost! That's all in the July-August issue of Monocle, on newsstands everywhere now. Or head to monocle.com to become a subscriber.
Who said print was dead? Certainly none of the guests who sit down with Tyler Brulé and Tom Edwards to dissect the best and brightest, glowing and glossiest in the magazine industry. Every Saturday at 10 a.m. London time, Studio One at Midori House can play host to art directors and publishers, photographers and columnists as they flick through their favourite journals, shred some of the periodicals they could do without, and dispense snippets of industry gossip.
Our paper is incredibly expensive and it's imported from Italy. And we had that discussion about the paper, but actually we decided the paper is too important. It's just too important that it looks good, that it's consistent. It's a little bit like hymnbook paper, and it creates the impression that we've been around for a very, very, very long time.
Occasionally, they also offer up some sharp opinions on where this turbulent sector might be heading. Join Tyler Brulé or Tom Edwards when Tyler's on the road for The Stack, Monocle 24's weekly print industry review and analysis show, every Saturday at 10 a.m. London time. Make it part of your must-listen lineup on iTunes or SoundCloud.
Now, as a quick aside and for a bit of fun, we asked Monocle 24's producer and presenter extraordinaire, Markus Hippi, a proud Finn himself, to give us his own personal take on the libraries he grew up with in the nation's rural north.
There aren't many institutions more Finnish than the country's library system. That is because the library stands for what the nation believes in most: education, equality, improving people's lives and creating democratic public spaces. Nasima Razmiar, Helsinki's deputy mayor for culture and leisure, recently told me about her first experience with the Finnish library system. Having arrived as a refugee, her family worried about the future. When she went to a library for the first time, she she was given her own library card. This small plastic object had symbolic importance in that it was the first piece of Finland she owned. Because I was actually born in Finland, I don't remember my first library experience so vividly. Instead, these public institutions just seemed to always be there. I spent a major part of my youth with books and only bought any hardcovers from a shop as an adult. My parents borrowed children's books for me, and during the holidays I would spend hours and hours going through countless bookshelves. My parents would probably have happily taken a break of an afternoon and left me at the library. They knew that I was in safe hands. When we moved to Siilinjärvi, we didn't even need to leave the street for our reading fix, as the library bus would stop at our doorstep every fortnight. I did my work experience at our library organizing shelves and learning to fix old books. I also strayed from the printed word, discovering numerous bands and artists thanks to our library's huge vinyl and CD collection. Finland is often hailed as a nation of great education. In foreign media, the focus is usually on what happens in the classroom, but libraries are equally important. It is impressive what kind of service you get from these institutions. Academically trained librarians offer expertise with their recommendations. If you are lucky enough to visit a smaller library, the staff soon gets to know you and your tastes. They almost end up becoming your personal content curators. Libraries have played a big part in creating my generational experiences. I read as many books and listened to as many albums as my heart desired. Getting hold of them was never about having enough money. Our library was a place to meet friends and read magazines and newspapers, and when having our rebellious faces, sometimes to hide in the back of the building for a cigarette, but don't tell that to anyone. And this is the place I used the internet for the first time, thanks to the library investing in a computer. Add all of that together, and the library is still the public place I remember most warmly from my hometown. Finland's library buildings are not only for browsing, but also places designed for people to meet and feel like they are part of society. And it makes perfect sense, as Nordic winters don't particularly encourage you to spend much time outside meeting people. The best news is that the Finnish love affair with libraries is showing no sign of fading. Instead, they are coming up with innovative ways to support customers. Recently, many have expanded their services, lending out everything from tennis rackets, ice skates and skis to sewing machines and heart rate monitors. In a number of cities, there are also workspaces and even studios for bands to rehearse in. When Finland turned 100 last year, the question was, what would be the best gift to its citizens? I can't think of a better pick than the new Helsinki Central Library, Audi. Due to open later this year, it is a fine example of what a contemporary Finnish library can aspire to be. Personally, I can't wait to fly to the capital to look through some of the books I first discovered as a 10-year-old kid in rural Finland. For Monocle, I am Markus Hippi.
Many thanks to Monocle 24's very own Markus Hippi for that report. Now, Brazil's literacy rate has long lagged behind its Latin American neighbours, such as Argentina, Uruguay and Colombia. But the country's relationship with books is looking up. Despite being in the middle of a recession, Brazil's book sales last year rose by over 4%. The presence of well-designed libraries in the country has helped strengthen its reading culture and made access to a good book a little easier. Lucinda Elliott, our Latin Affairs correspondent in Sao Paulo, guides us through some of the city's finest libraries.
As recently as the late 1990s, being able to read in Brazil was not a skill held nationwide. In fact, nearly 15%, roughly 13 million adults at the turn of this century, were illiterate. Brazil has since gone through its own financial and social ups and downs, but the number of those who can read has only moved higher. Roughly 92% of the population as of last year are literate, with 2 million more adults who can pick up a book. While Brazil still falls short of regional avid readers like Argentina, Colombia and Uruguay, reading rates have really caught up and libraries given a spruce up. In São Paulo, the wealthiest and largest Brazilian city, the change is notable. In the historic downtown area is Latin America's first 24-hour public library. The Mário de Andrade, named after a poet, considered one of the founders of Brazilian modern literature, took the decision in April last year to extend its opening hours to encourage more visitors. Public sector working hours are notoriously limited in South America, but general office and university timetables run much later. The library installed a standalone logging system that can schedule the withdrawal and return of volumes by reading the barcode of the book you want, without the need for a librarian to be present. Walking through the entrance of this Art Deco-style building, designed by French architect Jacques Pilon in 1942, visitors can find one of the largest neatly organised collections of chronicles in Brazil. The vast 12,000 square metre site, which is also the second largest public library in the country, had a two-stage refab in 2005 and again in 2010 when a separate research centre was built. Two airy study rooms today look over tropical plants in a patio garden on the other side of a more modern glass conservatory. Students and freelancers on Sundays sit side by side at desks as dusk falls. And it's not just novels and newspaper cuttings that are housed here. The Mário de Andrade was one of the first institutions interested in acquiring modern artwork by local artists. Today, several are hung along the library's chalky white corridors. 4 kilometres north of the city centre is the São Paulo National Library. This modern space, inaugurated in 2010, is up for an award this year as one of the top 3 libraries in the world. Situated in a poorer district, on the same plot where a violent prison complex, the Carandiru Detention Centre, once stood, the aim was to encourage and teach the pleasure of reading to residents, transforming a place of confinement into one of freedom to explore knowledge and ideas. As part of the new complex, designed by a Brazilian firm, Alfalo and Gasparini, there's additional and much-needed public space, with a park and play area next to the main library. Outdoor terraces on the upper level, facing east and west, are packed on weekends, and the entire building has been set out almost as a bookshop to attract a non-reading public. Spaces inside the library have been cleverly adapted to help the disabled, with special furniture, trained staff, and a collection of Braille titles. Best-selling copies of Brazilian and foreign literature arrive here promptly, say borrowers, unlike other bookshops and libraries, making it a go-to destination for those who live further away. When I visited earlier this month, there was a storytelling session for small children and lectures and musical performances for older readers. Specialist libraries, too, are making genres more accessible. The privately run philanthropic institute, Moreira Salles, opened a photographer's library last September on the city's main thoroughfare, Paulista Avenue, as part of a new gallery space. Here, an elegant Juan Miró mobile hangs from the ceiling. It's a wonderfully quiet, clean reading spot, away from the hustle of the high street out front. Free access to their photo archive, top industry magazines, how-to guides, and artistic coffee table books that would be entirely unaffordable to most are a huge draw. Further south of the centre, in the leafy and more villagey neighbourhood of Pinheiros, the Alceu Amoroso Lima Library has become an important hub for poetry. An entire floor was established in 2006 to display archives with weekly poetry readings. It was driven by local residents who campaigned to introduce a place to access different titles without having to cross town. Books are notoriously expensive in Brazil. Many must be imported. And historically, there's never really been a strong reading culture. Around 30% of Brazilians recently surveyed said they'd never bought a book. Libraries are having to adapt to the needs of the communities they serve. In recent months, the Ministry of Culture said several have set up semi-creches for very young children, where they can play games and attend reading groups, or improve their Wi-Fi connection, one of the more popular reasons for dropping by for those who don't have access at home. Here, the role of well-designed libraries that make people want to stop by and sit with a good book is key. For Monocle in São Paulo, I'm Lucinda Elliott.
Our sincere thanks there to Monocle's Lucinda Elliott for that report from São Paulo. And sadly, that's all we have time for on this week's show. Don't forget, if you can't wait until next week's, there's always On Design Extra, which airs every Thursday, a series of summer newspapers published by the Monocle team, plus a monthly magazine to get your teeth into with all our latest design scoops. Monocle On Design was produced by Daphne Karnesis and edited by the ever-patient Christy Evans. I'm Josh Fennett. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.
I don't know much about my history now. Don't know much about my ology. Don't know much about the science movement. Don't know much about the French I've been to. All I do know is I love you, Nick. And I wonder if you love me too. Oh, what a wonderful world this could be. Ooh. I don't know much about geography. About trigonometry, neck. Don't know much about the algebra. Don't know what a slide rule is for. But I do know one and one is two, neck. And I wonder if you love me too. Ooh, what a wonderful world it's gonna be. About biology. I don't know much about